This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project, welcome back to this week's after show.
We're going to be talking about a few things today.
Probably the biggest news at the moment is Facebook banning news.
Biggest news is the lack of news.
The biggest news is Facebook news. So, you know the details more. I've seen all of the headlines, but I haven't dived into as much. So, give us a lay of the land of what exactly transpired.
I think it's pretty simple. We've talked about it before on the show. We're talking about how Facebook and Google were being asked by the legislation to...
Australian legislation.
Yeah, Australian legislation. Just in Australia. So, obviously, all the time you go on Google, you go on Facebook, you get a link article to like Sydney Morning Herald or Daily Telegraph. And it's up to the way that Facebook and Google see it is like, hey, we're sending you this person. It's up to you to monetize them. So, like, show them ads or ask them to... Like, you probably see all the time that they ask you to, like, subscribe, right? So, that's the way they can make money and they see it as very fair. On the outside, it does seem pretty fair. And then, obviously, Facebook and Google make stupid money and the news content places make not great money. The reason they make not great money is because they have to pay for all the content to be created.
Yes.
Right? So, they're paying journalists to make every article. Think about Facebook.
Doesn't pay for content.
You don't pay for content, right? Everyone just makes content because they've convinced you it's the right thing to do. So, they obviously were far more profitable. So, now the government's like, oh, okay, cool, we'll even this up. And every time you link out to Sydney Morning Herald, you just got to pay Sydney Morning Herald for it. Facebook and Google, like, this is a joke, right? And part of this is like, they say, yes, everyone's going to want this, right? In every country around the world.
We'll want it.
Everyone's going to do it, right?
Well, I have some money.
So, Google has basically said, Google seemed to have come to some sort of compromise. Like, they're not going to pull out Google in Australia. They're doing some workaround. But Facebook didn't. Facebook just said, yeah, cool, done. So, Facebook is still around, obviously. But you'll see that if you try and get like an article, it just comes up with like a, due to new legislation, like we're not doing any referencing articles out. And I think part of the controversy that maybe turned it on fire a little bit more, which is it also means you can't get any links out to like proper information about COVID-19.
Oh, okay.
So, before on your Facebook feed, there was a big balance between like, you got your crazy auntie who's like, COVID's not real. And then there would be a thing underneath it like, oh, go to the Australian government website to learn more. And like, even those ones are not working. So, it's cut down a lot of, I guess, like the real information about COVID on it. But yeah, like to put it simply, you just can't end up on the news anymore if you're on Facebook.
So, is there any, like where in some ways we could be news, right? Because we are sort of reporting on current events sometimes. How do they distinguish who falls into that category of news?
Like, I think they've just pulled all the major
So they've started with the major news networks.
All the major, we're not there.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's not the size, because you have like huge websites that you can still link out to. It's not to do with how much traffic you do. It's just like I think there's a whole bunch of like those official news websites that have all got pulled.
Yeah. I'm sure they went through a list.
Yeah, I think there's regulation. I think to become news, there's like some regulation you have to hit in Australia.
Yeah.
Of like, hopefully, you fucking hope there is.
At this point, it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah. And they've pulled it.
Yeah, okay, interesting. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, if you look at the data now, the amount of people that get their news from Facebook and Instagram is overwhelming.
Yeah, most people get their news from Facebook.
But Instagram, unaffected. So, not as many people get their news from Instagram. And I think also the demographic that is consuming news on Facebook is also an older demographic, right? So it's like our parents are on Facebook consuming their news through Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, an interesting experience I had this week on the train was I had a very long train trip, which you may know, because I went the wrong way on the train.
It's what happens when you only grow up in Bondi.
So one positive aspect of this going the wrong way on the train was I just sat there and I watched this older man next to me and he was flicking through his Facebook, right? I don't know, he probably was maybe like 70.
Okay.
Some like strange phone, but it was a smartphone, and he had Facebook on it.
Probably Samsung. But.
anything not Apple, my car. It's like weird Martian phone, and he's flicking through it. Anyway, if you just flick, reading the news feed of someone in their 70s is a very interesting experience. Like there is so much. This was obviously before the regulation happened, but so much just like trash and like weird misinformation in there, and like articles that you just like never ever come across. I don't know, it was just like a bizarre experience, like seeing what this guy is seeing.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting just like watching him and he was doing it for half an hour, just going down, just scrolling. And like, I think people our age don't act like that.
Mm.
You don't just like scroll and scroll reading these like weird news articles and like weird Facebook groups on Facebook anymore. It's not really how we interact much on our social
media.
Know.
I don't want to speak for what other people do at our age, but potentially.
Seems like a little bit different because, you know, he wasn't looking at like what are his friends up to, or like he wasn't going on Instagram, wasn't messaging. It was just like just bizarre article after bizarre article about like, you know, I guess interests that are more in his age group.
Yeah.
So that, and I think you're right, like that is really the demographic now that really gets their entire news collated for them on Facebook. And it's it wasn't like general news. It was like a very specific type of
strange news
for this guy.
Well, I tell you, I had another experience like that that was also interesting. Well, I sort of, it's more to do with the algorithm, but one of the clients at the gym, he was like telling me about how he wants to get, so he's doing an endurance race, and apologies if he's listening to this, I'm not going to use your name, but he was like, oh, I'm going to get a colonic before my endurance race. I was like, well,
what's that?
Colonic, where they get a pipe, they shove it up your ass, and they shoot water into it, and they clean out your digestive tract.
Why would you, because that doesn't serve.
Exactly, right? So me and one of the coaches are questioning him. We're like, okay, why do you need this for an endurance race? It seems stupid. He's like, oh, you know, just like clean some stuff out, like make sure I'm fresh for the race. I'm like, okay, this logic like doesn't work, right? He's like, yeah, get a bit lighter, like clean out some of the toxins and stuff. I'm like, no, it's not a thing. Like, you know, your body is managing itself fine. It's like colon cancer and this is like different stuff. It's to do with fiber and other things. You don't have rotting, dead fecal matter that shouldn't be there in your digestive tract that you should have to clean out. If we did, with the whole human population would be dead because we didn't have colonics way back in the day. And
I have thought before around, I'm like, oh, I'll take a shit up and make it a little bit lighter. But I've never gone to the extreme of like a hose.
Yeah, like, look, here's the thing, right? We have spoken to gut health experts, MDs, everyone, gut bacteria specialists, people that dedicate lives and books to it, right? And it's never come up, right? It's never come up as a thing that is important. And that tells me that it's just a way for people to make money, right? Just like detox teas, just like, I don't know, like smelling, you know, smelling herbs and all this sort of stuff, right? It just doesn't make a difference. So he's like, all right, well, you know, I have my own beliefs about this stuff, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so he goes and sends me an article later, taking a screenshot, which is like explaining what colonics do and why they're important and blah, blah, blah. This is the problem with our generation. You just find the information that, it's confirmation bias, right? You find the information you want. So I go and I look at the website that he's gone to. This website is a New York-based company that all they do is colonics, right? So it's in their best interest to promote colonics because that is how they make money.
And there's probably some doctor there that's like, yep. There's probably a doctor that's, you know, standing behind this.
Yeah, because he makes money if more people do
someone
colonics,
someone with
the
qualification.
Right? So I think the logic is always flawed. When you get someone on, you got to think, okay, where are their incentives lie here? Which is why going and looking for information about colonics, the last place you want to go is the place that sells colonics. They're always going to be pro-colonics. No place that sells colonics is ever going to be anti-colonics. The best place to go is not necessarily places that are anti-colonics. The best place to go is an objective source that has no say either way, which is what we try and do on the podcast.
But remember, even, you know, that's why the news these days is such trash, because even tons of the news articles have been paid for.
Yeah.
You know, it's like part of somebody's PR campaign.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, if I'm not there to step in and tell them, okay, but no, because look at this website, look what they're selling, look what their incentives lie. Here is an objective source that doesn't have skin in the game here and is in this field of research. It's never come up. We've talked about it. It's never been relevant. There is no proven benefits here. Then, you know, then you've got some stronger evidence. Now, it's not to say that colonics don't have some benefits, or maybe there is some stuff in there we don't know about or whatever, but for how much, you know, how beneficial they make it sound, like the marketing, remember, they're marketing, right? Mm. So how beneficial the marketing
you
is
you pay
around
for
it.
The treatment, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah. And it's like, oh, it's a regular thing, you need to come back once a month and clean your stuff out. Like, you know, there's just ways, creative ways that people start to make money. So it's just all these things that go into it, and I realize that, you know, when you're obviously, the Google knows that you've bought a colonic before. They know you've searched colonics in the area. You've driven to a colonic place, you know, on Google Maps or whatever. You know, speaking of that, it knows your phone and stuff and knows you so well. There was some video on YouTube where this guy bought a brand new phone from the iPhone store. He bought bought two brand new phones. He put a SIM card in one of them. And literally the other one, he put a SIM card with data in one of them. And with the other one, he just turned it on, right?
But it can do Wi-Fi.
I'm not sure in the video. Yeah, it can do Wi-Fi, but I don't think he logged into any Wi-Fi. And he walked around a block in New York, and then he looked at like the tracking data on and like location services and stuff on the phones. And like one had a SIM card and data, one didn't, and they had both tracked his movements exactly the same. So your phone has stuff in your phone that is tracking you, regardless if you're connected to the internet or not.
Yeah, regardless it has GPS.
I mean, I don't think you turned on location services or anything.
No, the GPS is always on.
Yeah, so I think it's just like your phone knows so much more about you than what you think.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, it's like if you're on Google Maps, you go completely out of range, the blue dot can still be there.
Yeah, you can still move.
Yeah, you can still move around, but it's still got GPS services in there.
Yeah. So, but I just thought it was interesting because, you know, you think you're getting objective information, but it's like, oh, no, we know you shop for colonics. We know you went to the colonic place. We know that you've Googled it before. We know you're pro colonics. So let's reinforce that idea that you're good, you know, that you like colonics, which is why I just encourage people to use objective sources as much as possible if you can. That's why I like interviewing people so much when they don't have, you know, skin in the game. They don't have necessarily a book or a product to sell to make money. And we can just interview them. They can just speak about their experiences and their research and what becomes so helpful.
I would say as well, I think these days, almost, I don't even know where you really honestly go to get news. Because the general news is just such trash. And it's like a really horrible experience generally flicking through news on the internet.
Yeah.
And I don't really know. I think if you subscribe to a source, it's generally slightly better. But I've subscribed to like Apple News in the past, and like it's horrific.
No good.
Still the same trash. Like you're still getting fed just like absolute trash. Still on algorithms. Still ads inside of it. Still like, you know, people over 60 will never know this health insurance trick. It's just shit. You know, it's honestly shit.
So my question then is because I had the experience of living with Ev's sister, who's a bit older, and she is a news addict, right? Mm. So
I think it's a super unhealthy habit.
Exactly.
I've seen people become addicted.
Yeah, this is what I'm getting to, right? So she is they live together, and then obviously a few nights a week I would stay at their place, and when we wake up in the morning, the first thing that would happen, it was the morning show or like the news, right? And she'd be scrolling on the news feed, checking out news, posting things, updating us nonstop. And you think to yourself, okay, how important is it to stay up to date with every piece of news? She'd become addicted to staying up to date with everything. And if she never wanted to get behind on anything. And look, people can do what they want. So it doesn't really affect me. But it was just an interesting observation because I've never really met anyone in my life or being someone or known someone who's that connected to the news in a way that's like she was addicted. Mm. She had to know what was going on all the time. And I started to think, because to her, she's like, oh, like you're ignorant. Like, you're not staying up to date with it. You're in a bubble. Like, you just refuse to find out what's going on in the world. And I was like, look, anything that's actually important has always a way of making it into my bubble, you know, into, like, what I allow into it. I'm not off the grid. I just think anything that's majorly important that affects me, the people in my life will let me know about it.
Yeah, and I think people's perception, like, you've been convinced that you genuinely need to know about the politics of, like, Spain.
Yeah.
You just don't.
Yeah.
You know, and for so long we didn't. And if you get interested in Spanish politics, I think, awesome to look into it. but I truly think you've just been sold this bullshit that you actually need to keep up to date with shit that's not even happening in your own country.
But I know, we're essentially in some ways we're a media company, and I'm like, this is how they make money. They have to keep
a captive audience. Yeah, they're convincing you that you need to stay up to date with these things that you really don't. And for all of eternity, up until like the last 3 years, no one stayed up to date.
Yeah.
You know, like your parents weren't ignorant.
Yeah.
They just missed it and it was fine. You know, like when JFK got shot, I'm sure the news got to them.
Yeah.
But, you know, when he had like a sandwich in the morning, it didn't quite get to them.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And now you can know what.
And now you have to know. Yeah. And I think the idea that like, if you're ignorant. I've seen my mum is similar. She got addicted to it. And I think you can see like the kind of before and the after of it as well. And I genuinely think it's bad for you because it's just got nothing to do with your own life.
Also, the news is mostly negative, right? So people that absorb more news generally I'd say more negative people because they're more doom and gloom because
I think it rewires you for negativity. Definitely. Go on and it's like man pushes wife over with pregnant child off a cliff, like that's the shit that's on there every day.
Oh, coronavirus 10 times worse than what we expect. Like best example, right, was now that we weren't in this living situation during the lockdown or coronavirus, but when we would catch up after it, and it's not just the reasons that we spoke about, you know, that, you know, obviously people had different views on the virus as well, but I know that she was consuming 30x the news on the virus that I was, and all the virus news was negative when it was coming out, right? And so her approach was like, don't touch me, don't come near me, like, this is crazy, it's way worse, like, stay inside, blah, 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 this, no, we shouldn't meet up with the parents, and like, I'm not saying my approach was right, but I just saw her approach and I was like, wow, it's like overwhelming for her. It's like in her head, this is really, really bad.
Yeah.
And for other people as well that consumed a lot of news, that I had other friends that loved to stay up to date with the news, they also were like, this is awful. Like, we're all going to die. This is crazy. This like new world order, blah, blah, blah. And look, it's definitely,
COVID's
it's definitely bad.
Now.
I'm not saying it's not bad, but I'm just saying, obviously, yeah, the more inputs you put, negative inputs you put in, the more negative you're going to be throughout the day. So I definitely think, yeah, there's a lot going on with too much news consumption for sure.
Yeah, and I think if you find yourself on it, you have to question yourself, particularly, I think, time of day. Like, you don't need it in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Nah.
You don't need it in the morning. Like, we used to always watch, you know, when I was growing up, you'd watch the news at night.
Yeah.
And to be honest, that's plenty. That's still every day.
Yeah.
But like, you know, nowadays, it's unbelievable. Like, nowadays, something happens at 10 and it's like 2 p.m. It's like genuinely old news.
Yeah.
And you haven't even got to the evening news.
Yeah.
So I think like, the world's changed. I think it's generally is bad for you.
Yeah.
If you're on it every day.
Yeah. No, I couldn't see a good argument for saying that up to date.
So this is probably a good thing because now less people are on the news.
Yeah. No, I think so too. Any interesting. So talking of news, electric buses, right? There's this guy I follow on LinkedIn. Honestly, having used LinkedIn more, I don't know how I end up following some people. I don't actually know why things appear in my newsfeed. The algorithm doesn't really make sense to me. But regardless, this really cool guy that I follow, I think the company's called Nexport. Anyway, so they're like, they've got the biggest deals in Australia right now with electric buses. So they're starting to roll out electric buses and they've made a...
So someone's still driving it. Yes. Not like self-driving.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah.
Just electric.
Exactly, yeah. So they put up a video the other day of them, their factory, and they're building electric buses now, and they're going to start getting rolled out. Yeah. On the outside, they look exactly like the current buses in New South Wales, right? The blue ones. But the amount of positive comments that get dropped underneath this guy's like post is incredible. And you know what? What's great about it is, you know, you could say pretty generally that our generation cares a lot more about the environment than our parents' generation, right? Our parents' generation, most of them are starting to wake up. They're like, yeah, cool, it's a bit of an issue here. But it just wasn't a thing for them growing up. And obviously the generation, you know, behind us, they're like so climate change focused, right? It's everything. They don't even want to go to university unless it's got to do with like changing the climate and stuff, right? So it's good to see the support from the older generations because, you know, LinkedIn's an older generation user, business people. Getting so hard behind electric buses. And the big thing for me, obviously, environment's huge, but when you live in a metropolitan area that, you know, I've got a bus stop literally at my front door of my apartment building, the noise.
No, it's going to be one of the best changes ever.
The noise. Yeah. The noise pollution that buses create, they are the worst of all the things that drive on the road. They create the most noise by far, right? Because they stop and start more than any other transport, obviously, on the road. And every time they start up, they make so much damn noise. It's just so big. So the fact that they will go literally silent is incredible.
Well, I think it'll completely change unreal. Cities. Like, I think electric vehicles will be... It's almost like a bigger change in some ways in just like how you interact with just your environment and even the internet. If you think about it now, like when you walk outside your house now, it's the same as it was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Everything looks the same.
Except people looking at
their phone. People looking at their phone. But if you didn't know about the internet, you walk out and be like, oh, everyone's like looking at this thing in their hand. Other than that, everything's the same.
Yeah.
But once everything goes electric and like the whole noise of your environment completely drops, like I think it's hard to estimate, but there is a low level noise when you live in a city.
Yeah, for
all
sure.
All the time of just cars and traffic. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if you ever had the experience of just like the first time and you feel like one electric car coming down the small street towards you. You're like, oh, it's like no noise.
Yeah, it's not making any noise. Yeah. Pulls up, you're like, oh, you didn't make any noise.
Yeah, it's almost like hard to get your head around because you just think that's like, it's like an animal. You're like, that's just the noise it makes.
Yeah.
Those things make that noise.
Yeah.
And I think it'll, yeah, absolutely. And then obviously when you go to driverless, it's like one more level up, right? Because cars are actually doing what they're meant to instead of like breaking every road rule. But I think, yeah, like that is going to be the day you walk out, everything's electric, everything's driving properly is just a better place to live.
Yeah. So that I'm sure you listened to Elon Musk on Joe Rogan for the third time. And they covered a wide range of topics. But yeah, one of them obviously was, yeah, autonomous vehicles, electric cars. And I haven't seen it, but we got to watch it. There's a documentary on why GM almost went electric and why they didn't.
Originally.
Yeah.
I've seen some of that. Like it was...
Okay.
It's really interesting. It's like when they were first making cars, cars nearly became electric or they nearly went petrol, and it was like really tight.
Yeah.
And the whole petrol thing could never have been a thing. I think petrol still would have been extremely valuable, definitely to aeroplanes and other uses. So
rockets.
Yeah. So like, you know, the Arabs were still going to get rich, right? It was never going to be a useless substance. It's so useful. But yeah, cars were, cars started electric.
Right.
And then they went petrol.
Right.
In a quite a short period at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was like, almost a coin toss.
Yeah, yeah. It's really interesting. But obviously now, Elon's like, how we measured, he's like, I always reckon that the, he's optimistic, which is good. He's like, I think, you know, the world's always going to go to renewable energy at some point. He was like,
that's for sure.
I measure Tesla's success based off how quickly we sped up that process, how many years we cut off the timeline of that process, which I thought was super interesting that he thought it would get there eventually, because we kind of would have to, right?
It was going that direction.
We'll run out of petrol eventually, right?
Like, Priuses were coming out. Like, someone would have done it if it wasn't for Tesla.
Like, I do think there is, the climate change shift is starting to really, you know, roll out and take steam now.
It's building steam.
Yeah. It's building water vapor. But, it definitely needs to happen. And the technology that's coming out now for it is, you know, it's starting to get to the point where it's like, it makes sense. And I think there was some stat, it was like 3.5 million homes will be fully solar powered or something in Australia by the end of like 2025 or something, which is like really good. Like, my parents have solar energy now, which is really cool, and they're using it. Her parents have solar energy now. They're all, because it's all on like apps now, so it's like really interactive. They're like, oh, look how much like energy we saved today. Look how much money we saved today. So the usability of it is becoming really appealing to people. It's interesting because, you know, Rogan asked the question, will cars ever be solar powered? And Elon was like, nah, it's just like impossible. He was like, no, there's just no way the technology will ever get there. And he obviously explained some of the engineering behind it. But like, only the van, he said, would be able to.
Yeah, because you need like a certain amount of surface area. And a roof obviously has tons, but a small car, no.
And so it would get you like, I don't know, what do you say, 40 to 60 miles a day or something with charging. And so it would really work if you were like, you just lived in a van and you just drove around to different spots and just charge up, which I thought would be super cool. Like, if you chose the van life for a while and you didn't have to fill up and you literally just lived on the sun, that'd be sick. Obviously, if it's not sunny, you're fucked. But, you know, I think that's super cool. You would just like be zero waste and like, you know, just powered by the sun continuously. It's awesome. I mean, it's really, really cool.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even to tie back to fitness, people don't realize, but everybody's health, and like, you could even measure the average aerobic capacity of the nation, it's going to lift once the, like, everyone stops breathing in fumes all day on the road.
Yeah.
There is genuine, because you saw it during COVID.
Yeah.
There was like genuine health benefits when everyone stopped driving because of the first lockdowns. That is going to happen, but on like a way bigger scale, because it's going to be permanent.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be like 5-10 years of no cars emitting fumes on the road. So there's going to be health benefits to the whole society once this kicks in.
Yeah. Are you, like, if you had the option now, I know you've got a hybrid car, but you would go fully electric now? You're getting like a
Tesla? Yeah, I think the next car would want to be electric. Problem is, right now, I mean, there's obviously not much choices. Right, in terms of electric cars, I think that's just not going to be far away at all.
Yeah.
But I think now, if you don't get an electric car now, the way I see it is like, well, if you want to have your car for 10 years, in 10 years' time, you're like seriously behind.
Yeah.
So right now, it's fine.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking about the long term, then yeah, that's the way it's going.
Yeah, like I'm currently looking at a new car, and I've wanted to go electric for a while.
Mm.
But still, when Tesla is your only option and Tesla started at $120,000.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, all right, well, there's still an in-between phase here where we don't have to jump to the Tesla right now. Obviously, you can stretch and go the Tesla. But right now, yeah, you can get away with it. And it also, I think, you have to consider the whole context of your life. You know, obviously, you want to go as green and as possible. However, how green are you in your whole life?
Mm.
Cool. Like, I get public transport 7 days a week. So, I'm not really using the car anyway. And like, you know, my house doesn't generate, it's an apartment, right? So it doesn't generate heaps of greenhouse gases or anything like that. And so I look at, you know, the ways that you generate waste, whatever, and I keep it really low as it is anyway. So I'm like, look, everything's going to make a difference, but right now I'm doing most of the difference anyway. So ticking this last box is not going to be the game changer for how much damage I'm doing or my household's doing as individuals. So yeah, I think there's the context to it for sure, which is why like I like the buses. I'm like, cool, even if we didn't sell another Tesla, but we rolled out all buses, I reckon you'd make way bigger of a difference right now, you know, because only so many people are going to afford Teslas and buy Teslas. I don't know how far they drive their Tesla. Can't drive them that far yet. They've got to stay near their charging stations in some ways. So it's like, they're kind of driving around the same little bubbles.
Yeah, it's just rich people gone between home and work.
Yeah. And it's like, if we did the buses though, like that would be such a big difference. The noise and like, the fumes and stuff. Looking forward to that. But not far off. They're rolling them out pretty soon. I think they're rolling out 50 in the next 6 months. So it'll be interesting. Please roll them out to outside my place. That would be fantastic. Okay, so I've had a... before I get into some new goals that I've got, I thought you'd be interested in this one because we were talking about, the other day we were talking about professional sports and like if it's a good career for like Ziggy or not. And this like Cinderella story in the Australian Open has happened this year, the tennis. So I think it's the first time in like the last 25 years, a qualifier. So if you don't know, so a major tournament, so there's four major tournaments in tennis, Australian Open, the French Open, the Wimbledon, which is British Open, and then the US Open, right? In order to qualify for those events, you have to like be a certain ranking. Now, they open wildcard spots. So a wildcard spot might be like, say Federer's injured, right? And his ranking dropped because he hasn't played for 6 months. They'll give him a wildcard because Federer is going to come back. He's going to whip everyone's ass, right? Now, they also have a certain amount of spots for qualifiers. So qualifiers play a tournament literally the weeks leading up to the Australian Open to qualify for the Australian Open. But they play, like you'll qualify, you'll win the qualifier spot, and then the next day you'll play your first round. So it's not like you get a week off, right? So they play a hard tournament and they go straight into it. Now the qualifiers, they're on what is called the Challenger Circuit. The Challenger Circuit is like all the people kind of like outside the top 100, right? Or like outside the top, 150. And they make like no money, right? Unless they have like rich parents or like they're a part of some academy that sponsors them or like, I don't know, they've managed to like generate some income somehow. Most of them are like pretty broke, right? Yeah. They don't really have any major sponsors. They might get some free rackets or like some free clothes or whatever, but they definitely are like, on a shoestring budget. This guy, he's Karatsev. He is a qualifier. He made it to the semifinals last night, right? He got spanked by Djokovic, but He was competitive. It was competitive, definitely. Like, obviously, just the world number one, like, edged him out the whole time. Anyway, but what's hilarious is because tennis...
Well, so, what was he ranked coming into this? Or he doesn't even have a ranking?
No, I think his world ranking was, like, 114 or 140. It's, like, that high. But what's so funny about this is because, obviously, tennis commentary is... You're doing such long matches, right? So, it's hours of commentary. So, it's like a podcast in some ways. And they've talked about certain players for so long. There's only so much you can say about Djokovic when he's been on the circuit for like 15, 20 years. That's like, all right, cool. There's not much we can add to this except that he's playing really well. So what ends up happening is when this new guy comes on the circuit, that's all they talk about, right? So they talk about his history and his playing and blah, 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 and like all these funny stories. Some of the stories they're talking about last night when he was in the semifinal, they're talking about how broke he is, right? So he's set to make, I don't know, like 200 grand from like making it. They're like, this is life-changing money. Mm. It's going to like, you can hire like coach. It's going to get sponsorships. Like it's going to be 200 grand in prize money, let alone like the sponsorships and stuff. But they said he's so broke that like the pair of shoes that he was wearing, he's like, he's going to burn through them. Because like you need lots of tennis shoes because you're sliding, right? You burn through them. He's like, he might not have a change of shoes. They're like, I think he has a hole in his shoe and he's still playing.
Goodness.
And they were also saying like, we're pretty sure he borrowed a shirt from his teammate because he's gone through so many t-shirts. He didn't think he'd make it to the semifinals. Yeah. He's like, oh, probably at most I might make second or third round. That's like best case scenario. But I made it through like fourth round, quarters, semis, and he's borrowing shirts off his teammate. I think because they like live in this coronavirus bubble, they like can't go out shopping for clothes or whatever, and like he has no coach or no fans or whatever. So he just like had to borrow a shirt from his teammate. Imagine being like semifinals against Djokovic, who's probably got mountains of free gear, right? Like piles of clothes that he's not wearing.
He's a world number one.
Yeah, world number one. And this other guy's out there who's like, he's knocking on his teammates. Always like, hey, bro, like I'm in the semifinal tomorrow. Can I borrow a shirt? It's crazy. Because he came out, he's wearing all different clothes.
Yeah.
Like throughout the tournament. He doesn't have a sponsor. No, he's like filler one day and then he's like Adidas the next day. Like,
where's he from?
He's from Russia.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, he's from Russia. So, I just thought it was like proper Cinderella stories, but really interesting. But that is like a life-changing tournament for him. So he's like won, say, five games in this tournament, or five matches, sorry. And the money he's accumulated, and I think they said he was going to like 41 or something in the world, 42. So now, when he goes to the next major tournaments, he doesn't have to qualify anymore. So he goes straight in. So that's
he gets sponsors, he gets money.
Exactly. And he just gets entry straight into the tournaments, which is like, even if you go out first round of a tournament, like you still get a decent amount of money. So like now he's... Even if he loses his first game of the next tournament, he'll make more money than if he won like a qualifying tournament.
He's fucking
way
mad.
More. Yeah. Well, he's got to keep winning. Yeah. Obviously, if you keep losing, your rank drops, you get out. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens because for some reason, the Australian Open, because it's like the first major tournament of the year, and I guess this is like any sport, what separates the best players, you know, in tennis, obviously one of the most competitive sports in the world, is how, because tennis is such a demanding sport throughout the year, right? They don't really have it. They have a really short off season and they play nonstop all the time. And the games, they're long. They're really, really long. Like if you contrast it to something like the NFL, really short season, really high intensity. Like how much playing time would you get in a game? You might only be out there for like when a play starts to when a play ends, it might only be like minutes per game that you're actually playing in action, right? Yeah. These guys like hours and hours and hours throughout the year. So their bodies break down. So the Australian Open's interesting because guys that you've never heard of, it happens all the time. Guys well outside the seed and well outside the top 50 always go really deep in the tournaments. Always a couple of Cinderella stories. But then they disappear throughout the year. It's just because like they're fresh going into it. But the question is always, can you make it throughout all the tournaments out of the year? Because you'll play like 15, 20 tournaments in a year, which is like, you know, so many matches.
Durability.
Exactly. Like mentally, can you handle it? Can you like, because you know, tennis is such a mental sport. You're out there for so long, trying to stay focused. So yeah, it's really interesting to see like when players do really well in the first major tournament of the year, if they can sustain it throughout the whole year and then like keep getting good. So like when players are like really good at the top for a long time in tennis, people have a lot of respect for them because it's really hard to do. Anyone can play one good tournament. Like anyone can play one good game.
And it's an individual sport.
Yeah.
So it's not like you got carried.
Yeah, and you're like, yeah, you're backing it up like week after week and you're traveling across all different time zones. You play, like, it's a really tough sport. But, I mean, they're financially rewarded.
Yeah.
They make a shitload of money. Yeah, tennis players. Anyway, that's how it's going. Okay, so I ended up having a good think about some of my goals. Now, people know that I still have the goal of running a marathon. I took some people's advice. I'm going to sign up for one. I think it's going to be more enjoyable. I think we already established that. And I feel like that's my lower body taken care of. But I need some, I need some upper body goals. So I wanted to get
because you'll be shirtless, I assume, for the run.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So yeah, I wanted to do some
more. To be honest as well, to look the best in a marathon race, I think you're gonna be surprised. You can look terrible.
What do you mean?
The average standard of aesthetics in the upper body
turn
up at one of these marathons is low.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not surprised.
If you turn up at any sort of like fun run, fun swimming event, I'm always astonished.
Yeah, I'm running against my parents, basically.
Yeah, you can be pretty, but like they probably will beat you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you can be pretty good at running and swimming and really look like you never work out.
Well, look at Tom Brady. Yeah. I know you can like look like shit and actually be really good at things. So I figured, when it comes down to goals, and maybe you feel differently about this, and probably the people listening to this right now might feel differently, but I do really think that your goals have to excite you. I think like it's something that when you reach them or in the process of reaching them, has to be really fun. I mean, some people have the opinion that like, you know, a goal is a goal, and like if you grind and you get there, it doesn't matter. Like if you achieve it, you achieve it, and that's the purity of setting a goal. But for me, I think at this point in training, I have to like get excited by the goal that I'm doing. And yeah, obviously the process can be hard and elements of it can be boring, but I think the reward has to be there. And I just felt like for a while with fitness, everything that I guess I excel at and that I'm good at are just things that in the grand scheme of things, just a lot of people can do. Now, maybe some people can't put it all together. So like, oh, wow, you know, you can do the fitness stuff, but you can also do the strength stuff and the Olympic lifting stuff. You know, very like a CrossFit approach where it's like, oh, wow, this person can do a lot of stuff. But because so many people do CrossFit now, I'm like, still what I can do is kind of normal in many ways. A lot of people can just do a lot of stuff now because CrossFit's got so popular. When no one knew about CrossFit and you're doing muscle-ups, they're like, oh my God, this guy is incredible. And it's not to show off to other people, but I think from my own sense of achievement, I feel like I have so much training years left, right? If I think of the timeline, I'm like, do I just want to sit in what I'm doing now, which is just hit WODs and still do really well? Do some strength work, do some knees over toes stuff, play some sport. Yeah, it'd be good. But I could also put aside some time and achieve some skills or some strength. That would be, you know, pretty, I guess, you know, if I look back at the training career, I'd be like, that's cool. I'm glad I put effort into that and achieved that. And man, the only thing that came up for me, I was like, oh, maybe I could get like a huge bench press or like a 600-pound deadlift or something, because I think I can only really pick one thing because, you know, the amount of time you and I have, we don't have hours and hours each day to train. So can't pick a whole lot of things. I can definitely always make time for running. It seems pretty straightforward, pretty easy. Only have to really do it twice a week and just build it up. So I know that fits into my goals and my lifestyle. But I want to go after calisthenics goal. Now, the handstand was the first one that came to mind. And obviously, I did a lot of handstands in lockdown. I think I will do handstands eventually. However, the one that actually has appealed to me the most here is a bar muscle up without a false grip, strict.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I wanted
not
to-
Not easy.
No, and I wanted to play to my strengths. And like pulling power has always been one of my strengths. It's not like the greatest pull in the world, but on average, I can pull a lot higher with more strength. So I was speaking to Ev, and she's obviously knows heaps about adult gymnastics. Mm. She's like, yeah, I think that will be like the easiest one for you to achieve. So I wanted to get like a really easy calisthenics goal,
but it's
like
it's hard. Easy and when it comes to like calisthenics goals, always different. They're like, yeah, that'll be the easiest one for you. Oh, cool. How long? Oh, it's going to be like 18 months of like daily grinding and work. Oh, so not easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, but no, it's not 10 years.
Yeah. Oh, you want to iron cross 20 years. So I thought like for me, that would be a fun goal to get after. So that's what I'm going to start pursuing and start trying. Cause I thought, okay, like really all I have to do is like do pull-ups, some variation of pull-ups 3 days a week. And I can get that. I'm already doing pull-ups anyway, but make that a big focus. And I think it'd be pretty cool. And you get that one. It's like, all right, cool. Now like work to maintain that goal. Cause there's always like, okay, once you achieve it and you can maintain it, you kind of do it nonstop.
Yeah, you've got them.
Yeah. And so now that, and then I would move on to maybe something like a handstand, you know, something like that. So yeah, that's what I'm interested in the moment. That's what I'm going to start getting.
How do you train the turnover if you don't do the false grip?
Yeah, so I was talking to, watching.
That is extremely hard.
Watching some videos on that. You just have to get a really strong pull.
Yeah.
You have to get a really strong pull.
So you get speed and height.
Yeah, because that's what I was talking to him. I'm like, oh, I need to practice a lot of pull-ups. So I'm like squeezing at the top and like getting really strong in that top position. She's like, no, you need to get strong at explosive pulling.
Yeah, fast
pulling.
Because
it's not about the transition at that point. If you watch these guys that do it, they're catching it at the top of where you would with a kipping bar muscle. She's like, you just need such a strong pull, you're flying to the top.
Yeah.
It's not in the transition. And that's obviously the mistake that you would make if you started training the false grip one. So they're very different.
Well, if you train the false grip one, then you can do like really slow, controlled bar muscle ups.
And those guys that have really strong pulling power can probably do those anyway.
Yeah,
by developing that strength, they're going to develop. They might have, they might struggle with a false grip turnover, but they can go down really low and they can transition out and they can build that up. The harder one is to build that explosive strength. It's obviously easier to build the false grip strength, but yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't interest me as much.
Have you looked into the training to pull fast?
Yeah, I've looked at some stuff, but it's a lot of the stuff we're doing already.
Yeah.
It's just like,
it's just progressive, like sticking to the plan, doing it in the long term.
Really heavy weighted pull-ups, fast, doing pull-ups, not grinding pull-ups.
Yeah.
Like just keeping pull-ups fast and explosive and really clean. Doing some like one-arm progressions to build single-arm strength as well. And then honestly, outside of that, it's just taking care of your elbows and your lats and stuff and just like doing rehab and just making sure. Because first thing you do, you start increasing pull-up volume, you get elbow problems. Mm. It's like super common, right? So that's sort of the main thing that I'm going to start getting. And I think I just need, because I'm fairly lazy, I'm like, I just need something I know that I'll do pretty easily. Because, if I was to train for, I don't know, like a squat or a deadlift or something, I'm like, oh, I think about all the warming up and the prep and the injury. I'm like, I'm not going to do it. But if I know it's pull-ups, I'm like, I'm doing pull-ups twice a day anyway. I'm just kind of like throwing them in there. But now I just put more energy and focus into the pull-ups.
Yeah, I think it's when you pick training goals, a lot of time people can forget how different goals have very, very different commitments.
Yeah.
Totally. So, you do like, say the marathon goal is maybe a good one. You have to be aware that, okay, there's a certain amount of hours. Like, am I going to set aside? Because you're probably going to get up to maybe 30 kilometers a week of running, 40 kilometers. So, that's still only like 3 hours of running.
Yeah.
Not a huge commitment, considering you don't need to warm up that much for
the accessibility,
cool down, all that stuff, right? Like it probably is in total 3 hours of training, right?
Yeah.
Which you can do any time, which a lot of people can set aside too.
Yeah.
But then say you set a goal, maybe like a CrossFit goal. People, I think, don't realize the time commitment of that. Even becoming mediocre at CrossFit is a massive, massive time commitment because you're often traveling to special gyms where you can do special training. There's like a laundry list of movements you need to be improving and flexibility work and conditioning. And there's like so much into that. So you have to really, really think about it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Same thing. Even I think a goal where you're doing a lot of really heavy lifting for the lower body is a bigger time commitment than you probably think. You can't just sneak in some extra sets of deadlifts and work your way up to triple body weight.
Yeah.
There's so much preparation and time.
So much program commitment you've got to commit
to. You're doing your core activation, you're doing all your back accessories just to prepare your body to do it.
Yeah.
So different goals, but it sounds like it's a pretty smart goal because it's still fun and exciting. It's still going to be very hard, but the time commitment is lower.
And the injury chance, like if it was to be a heavy deadlift, right? Say I want to deadlift 600 pounds, I know the amount of injury setbacks would be very discouraging. I'd be like, oh, I'm just going to put it on the back burner for a bit while my back heals up or whatever. That's just not going to be worth it for me.
Yeah.
Okay, worst case scenario, I get a sore elbow. That doesn't ruin my day. I get a sore lower back, that ruins your fucking week.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Every time you sit down, you got to get up. It's like, get out of bed, sharp pain. You twist the wrong way, sharp pain. It's like, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, and I was even thinking about the same thing when I was, because I'm doing my run on my 30th birthday, 30 kilometers with 30-pound vest.
When is that?
It's in April.
April.
So, I'm actually nervous. This week, I've got to do the second one. I think we're going to do 20 kilometers this weekend.
Okay.
Straight after our podcast. But I was like, when I thought through that one, I was like, what was the commitment for this? I'm like, really, I just need to set aside like a few hours, like every second weekend, and it's on my weekend, and I'll do it then.
Mm.
You know? And my chance of injury in this is like, okay, pretty low, because I'm already walking. I've already got like strong feet, strong shins, and like really strong legs. So, am I probably going to be all right with injuries? And if I get them, they're probably going to be minor, and I can deal with them as I go. So you just got to pick the right goal for, I think, where you're at with your life.
Yeah.
To make it, you know, increase your odds of achieving it. Not pick easy goals, but just pick goals that you...
realistic.
Yeah, and just, you can actually commit to what's going to take to achieve it.
Yeah. And that, I think that the feeling of picking a goal you can't achieve and then getting after it is and failing is just a very disheartening process. Mm. You're like, well, I tried last time and it didn't work, so why should I bother?
Mm.
It's like, well, you set the wrong goal in the wrong context. So I'm giving myself to the end of the year to get it. So I'd say before January 1st, I'll be doing bar muscle ups.
Yeah, I think you put it in perspective as well, because you're already pretty good at pull ups.
That's what I mean.
So you've given yourself 10 months.
Yeah.
You know, probably sounds like more time than you need.
Yeah.
But it's probably better to do it that way.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right, cool. So we've got some listener questions. We spoke the entire show. We're 40 minutes deep and we've got 20 minutes to wrap the whole thing up. So listener questions. Before we dive into the first one, when it comes to programming, obviously we've mentioned it a few times. The apps that we are using to support our gym is TrueCoach. You guys know this. If you are delivering online coaching, if you're stepping into the realm of becoming an online coach, if you would say, hey, My Muscle Project, I want to be an online coach. Where should I start? I'd be like, cool, get TrueCoach. That is the first thing you get.
I would caveat that, particularly if it's individual programming.
Yes.
If you are training, like you're giving people different programs and you want to coach them, it's the app for it.
That's why I said coaching, because generally, like if you're giving, like we are not coaching people on project programs.
No.
No.
That's not coaching.
But if I wanted to, yeah, if someone wanted to get coaching off me, I'd be like, cool, what's your email? I'm going to set you up a TrueCoach account. That's how we're doing it at all our gyms. That's how I suggest you do it online. So if you're a coach, if you're a gym and you're delivering online programs, definitely check out TrueCoach. The mindmuscleproject.com/TrueCoach is where you can find the free trial and the discount code.
Okay, we got some good listener questions. Jessie Holmes is the first one. I think that's a female. She has a soleus injury. So, in the past year, caused by netball, definitely a female. And she's struggling to find any useful information to help rehab and strengthen up. I've actually had soleus injuries as well in the past. To clarify it, soleus, if you want to think about it, is like just below your gastroc. So, it's like the lower part, kind of in between your Achilles heel and your calf. So, it's like the lower part of your soleus.
Yeah.
Usually... So, I remember when I was injured with this, I was injured for it mostly because it was weak. There's a number of ways you can get it. A really common way, how I got it, and I think a lot of people get it, is when you start doing a lot of hill running, because you work your soleus when, more like when your leg is bent. So, if you did like
when
a
your
seated,
knee is bent, right?
Yeah, so if you did a seated calf raise,
you're
going to be strengthening your soleus. If you did a standing calf raise, you're going to strengthen more your gastroc. So, just like your main big calf muscle. So when I started doing a lot of hill training for rugby to get ready for it, I would, because my knee is bent as I'm going up a hill, I would often get injuries from just weak soleus. And the number one way I fixed it is I actually just started training it. Because I'd done some calf raises in the gym, but I always just did them standing. I was like, that's my calf, done.
Yeah.
But you can actually train your soleus specifically, and it's with a lot of just bent leg work. So that can be, like we've got them in Project Strong, but like calf raises at the bottom of the squat. It can be a seated calf situation. You don't really need a machine for that. You can just put weights on it. So I would actually start, obviously there's like soft tissue work you can do, which usually in that area is effective, but actually start training your soleus in the gym.
Yeah.
Can help.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the first specific soleus training that I saw was in the knees over toes program. Obviously basketball, netball, pretty similar, but what he gets you to do, obviously outside the standing calf raises, he's like, cool, that's standing calf raises. He's like, now soleus. And he basically goes up to a wall, straight arms, leans into the wall with his hands, and then drops down into like a parallel squat.
Yeah.
And he just does calf raises, holding like
they're
a 90 degree
brutal.
Squat. Yeah. So I started doing those, and they feel weird because unless you've trained, if you're used to training calf, you're like, I'm not hitting my calf.
Yeah.
You're not hitting your calf. You're hitting your soleus, which is a different muscle. So it burns and it flexes and it contracts different muscles. which sit underneath your calf. So that's why it feels a bit weird, but you are training your soleus when you do that. And it sounds like, yeah, that's maybe what you haven't done.
Yeah, it sounds like it's super undertrained.
Yeah.
So properly training that is going to help. Training Duran. He is a freelance personal trainer and he wants to get programming for general physical preparation, GPP. How do I get better at programming for it?
Oh, so he wants to learn how to program better for GPP?
Yeah. I guess for clients because he's a personal trainer.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, most people will program for general population. Mm. That's really the truth. Most PTs out there, you are going to work with people that come in with fairly similar goals. Hey, I've got like, you know, my back sore from sitting too much, my shoulders roll forward, I got bad posture, I want to lose some weight, I got low energy. Those are the typical things that you get with general population. You know, you don't get in, it's like, hey, bro, like, you know, I'm at 250 kilo deadlift. I'd like to go to 275 and compete in the nationals of Australia. Like, what progression should I do from the blocks? Like, that never happens, right? So, I think this question is relevant for most people that are PTs or get trained by PTs. So, the question is really, like, how do I program for most people? The answer to that is, I think it just depends. You know, you've got to come in and these people have got to present something to you and you have to look at what is the focus, what is the priority for this person? Because everyone has some injuries, some different movement patterns, different body types, obviously different goals, all pulling from a similar set of goals, but in the context of, you know, their injuries and their lifestyle and stuff, if their goal is weight loss, there is sometimes, you know, losing weight is not the first priority. You know, if they got such a bad hip and they need a hip surgery, rehab is the first priority. If they want to lose weight, but, you know, they're not sleeping enough and they sleep 3 hours a night, okay, well, we're going to work on some sleep for a while. So, those are sort of the lifestyle factors to consider first. But then when it comes to, I guess, general programming, so let's say someone comes in, they're like fairly healthy, they sleep pretty well, hydrated, they've got the nutrition sorted, they're getting enough sleep, you're happy, but the exercise program hasn't worked. I think most general population people don't do enough just good periodized strength training and like resistance training. Most people probably do a little bit too much cardio, so they've run a bit too often. They've done too many circuit classes. They've gone from Barry's Bootcamp to F45 to Orange Theory to CrossFit. They haven't just had a coach give them, yeah, you can definitely put some circuits in there. You can definitely put some conditioning in there. But I think most people would benefit from like, cool, all right, we're just going to do some like good mobility, some good activation, some warm-ups. We're going to hit, you know, some deadlifts. We're going to hit good squats, lunges, you know, pressing, and we're going to work on your mobility. You don't need to get fancy with these people, right? You just need to give them the stuff that works, the simple stuff with good progression, keep them interested, make the sessions entertaining. Yeah, tell them to go for some walks on the weekend and keep getting sunlight and drink water.
Yeah, I mean, it's not too complicated. I think the biggest problem I see is that the trainers will just always give them the type of training they like. So you see some trainers like, oh, cool, you train with me, we're doing like all the squat bench dead because I'm a power lifter.
Yeah.
The other person's like, oh, no, dude, that's crazy. You want to be like balancing a kettlebell on your finger while you like hop up and down the other foot. Like, you just see such variation. But you do notice that they give that to every single client.
Yeah.
So if you train is like, give one person that, one person this. So I would try not to be that person. Try to do a variation there. But then, yeah, try not to get too lost in the GPP where you have no more progression anymore.
Yeah.
Because that can be an easy mistake. Get someone's like, yeah, I want to be generally fit. You're like, cool, we'll do all sorts of different stuff. But then you don't progress anything. Right, and then clients will leave because they're not progressing.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's easy to fall into the trap of also just smashing people. Mm. They just want to get smashed. Sometimes you just need to like slowly. Sometimes it's a good sales technique to be like, all right, cool, we're gonna do a session. You push them a little bit, so they get a really good feeling, and then over time, as they build the trust with you, you're like, cool. So like, not every session I'm gonna push you, and the reason is because like you're not gonna recover from it because you have the other stresses in your life and, you know, sleep and all this other stuff. So, you know, today we're just going to work on some good strength training. You might not feel smashed at the end of it, but like, we're going to do this twice a week because it's going to be the best thing for you when the trust is there.
Okay, next question. ACM personal training, bar positioning and setup for back squats.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about this a lot. Okay, I think at this point now, if you can't go up to a wall, right, put your feet a little bit away from the wall, and you can't do like a wall angel where you like line your hands up with say like your shoulders and bring your shoulders all the way back so that they're flat against the wall without the position of your lower back moving. I just don't think you're ready to do back squats with a narrow hand position. If you can go out wider and your back position doesn't move, then I think you need to go with a wide grip. But if you can't even achieve that wide grip, where it starts to go wrong is this, I can't remember which interview we did, but where it starts to go wrong is that external rotation at the shoulder. Most of us don't have enough external rotation at the shoulder. We crank our shoulder into the position to hold the straight bar and throws out our lower back. And that's why people get lower back issues when they squat. It's why they're so overextended when they squat. It's got nothing to do with their ability to like brace in their core position.
So their chest is too tight.
Yeah, their shoulders are too far forward. They don't have enough rear delt strength to hold the bar into position. That's why people's elbows drift underneath the bar in a back squat, because they don't have the requisite strength. It's a very unnatural position, the back squat. Very, very unnatural. Your shoulders like to sit forward in a squat, which is why a dead ball squat, a goblet squat, a front squat, a safety bar squat, they're much more natural position for the shoulders. It doesn't cause people as many issues. So I think back squatting is fine as long as you can kind of meet that test, which is, again, it's like a wall angel getting your hands into that position there. I don't know what you want to add to that.
No, I would just add as well, which is, you know, obviously you can, everyone's different. You can try the more the high bar squats or the low bar squats. I would just try and not keep flogging a dead horse if one type of position doesn't work for you.
Mm.
So if you're like, oh, like everyone says like the high bar squats are so much better. But man, if it's causing you back pain or hip pain or that to your clients, like I would just not hammer it.
Yeah,
I would find the one that works really well for you and stick with it.
Yeah,
you know, like super low bar for me, like it doesn't work. It doesn't feel good. But I've had clients who are the opposite.
Yeah,
and I might look at them and say, oh, like, you know, for me that doesn't work, but for them it's working.
Yeah,
so you just leave it.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you're a, you know, built for squatting, high bar works really well. Mm. And if you're less built for squatting like me, then low bar favors you a little bit more.
Yeah, usually.
Yeah.
Okay, last question, Josh Stick 26. What are some groin and hip flexor exercises?
Okay. Cossack squats?
Man, it's a pretty good question because they often are undertrained.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see a lot of like groin pulls, hip flexor pulls, particularly if you go and play sport and you're kicking
because
you just undertrained it.
Yeah, most people squat too much with the same foot position.
Exactly.
And they just lunge with the same lunge position. It's like they don't train enough. I think one of the best ones is Cossack squats, honestly.
Weighted Cossack squats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can't do like a Cossack squat with like half your body weight for like one or two reps, that's the issue, I think. I think you need to really build that up. Like, I would need to grab, say, two 24 kilo kettlebells and, you know, do multiple reps Cossack squat. Like, I have to. If I'm not at that level, I feel like there's some mobility issues going on here. There's some weakness. There's some imbalances there. I just feel vulnerable. I just feel like all I've been doing is this one movement pattern squatting, and I'm definitely missing out.
Yeah, sure. Particularly, you know, what you often find is if you've got into squatting with quite a narrow stance, and deadlifting with a narrow stance, you are doing like no groin training.
None. Yeah.
And the other muscles are getting so, so strong.
Yeah.
So that's how you develop imbalances. Yeah. And then you go and you do something different. You kick a soccer ball and like, yeah, you got a groin pull, right? Yeah. That's what happens. See it happen all the time. So I would definitely, definitely recommend training them. That's a killer exercise. I've seen people do it with like chains or like just like a weight vest on when they're doing the Cossack squats. Cause sometimes it's hard to hold the weight right in front of you unless your mobility is really good for it. But yeah, I would say building that up. And then for the hip flexors, all the different, like obviously just leg raises.
Yeah.
So like training your compression, whether that's like single leg, double leg, one leg out to the side, all the possible variations for it. You still got to get them strong.
Yeah. The last thing I'll add to the groin training as well is obviously there's all different variations of lunges and all that sort of stuff, but like really you can just get better at it, take your squat out wider as well.
That's
just
another way. And your deadlift.
Yeah. Yeah. For sumo deadlifts. Mm. Yeah. I can't tell you how many people they're so strong and conventional. I put them into a sumo deadlift position. They go, oh, all I can feel is my groin, like it's going to snap. And I was like, oh, cool. It's an issue. Like your groin is way too tight. So yeah, just taking your squat stance out wider for a bit. Obviously, the weight might have to go down. You might be really sore for a bit, but it's fine. You're just training new ranges and activating new muscles. You just have them for a while. Obviously, don't go ridiculously extreme and dislocate your hip, but yeah.
No, you just build it up. And what you usually find is that it builds up really quickly.
Yeah.
The groin strength on that sumo deadlift.
Yeah. And then you bring it back in to what you're used to and yeah, you've got way more strength. So yeah, heaps of things to consider there. But okay. Thank you for those great listener questions. Guys, you can always send them into the Instagram. You can email them in as well. So plenty of ways to get these questions to us. And yeah, always great questions. So before we dive into the review, which again is on Binge in Australia. I'm not sure where it would be. It'd be probably on Netflix or something else or HBO in America. But one of the episodes you guys will listen to, actually you probably listened to it last week, which was the founding story of...
No, it's out... It would be out a few days before this episode.
Yeah.
This most recent in the black.
Yeah. So, Brendan McCormack, who is the founder of Fitify. Really interesting story, right? So, I don't know if you heard in the news as well, but the girl who started Bumble, the founder of Bumble, she became the first self-made billionaire female in the world.
No, I think the youngest. I don't think she's the first.
Female.
She was the youngest female because she's only 31 years old.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the first self-made female billionaire.
Nah, because there's the like youngest. You know, there's like the Spanx chick. She's fucking easily a billionaire. The, you know, the Spanx from
right.
from Oprah
okay.
and shit.
Oh yeah, okay. So youngest.
She's the youngest.
Youngest.
Yeah.
She's okay, also, yeah.
Dude, she's 31.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think you could be right there. Yeah,
and yeah, she has a baby.
She was on the Forbes 30 yeah. under 30 thing. Yeah. So it's an incredible story. And what makes it more incredible is that you know, she did it after like a huge controversial thing from like Tinder. She was like sort of a co-founder of Tinder.
Oh, really? Is that how it
yeah,
happened?
Yeah, but there was like sexual harassment.
Oh, that's right.
And stuff
yeah,
involved.
She left. Yeah.
yeah. And so she was like, all right, fuck you. I'm just going to start up a massive app and become a billionaire. And the some of the co-founding team of Bumble, which I didn't know, is working at Fitify, a part of Fitify, which is awesome, right? Yeah. Which is so cool. And so we get into that story in that episode. So guys, definitely go check it out. I mean, I think dating apps are obviously the future of how people are going to find their
Bro,
partner.
I think it's the present.
Yeah. I mean, when I say the future, I mean like people only use that.
Yeah.
You know, I think there won't be any other way to do it. And yeah, you can obviously go on this app Fitify, which is for people that are looking for fitness relationships to do with fitness and health and wellness and that sort of stuff. So yeah, you can hear that whole story on last week's In the Black. So definitely go check that out. If you want to sign up to it, themindmuscleproject.com/Fitify. So Fitafy. And whether you like the name or you don't like the name, you can hear the story behind the name as well. Okay, so review this week is, Raph hasn't seen this, but it's actually been all over the buses throughout our city and stuff as well. Like Foxtel is just spending heaps of money on advertising. But Australian actor Nicole Kidman and longtime OG romantic rom-com actor Hugh Grant have paired up together many, many years after their prime. Or their prime looks for this show called The Undoing, which is fucking awesome. There hasn't been a show like this, like a psychological thriller. So my favorite genre is sci-fi. My second favorite genre is like thriller.
It's on HBO in the States.
Okay. Yeah. This is finally, I feel like they've put together a really good psychological thriller. There was a few of these on Netflix for a while, but there hasn't been one this well scripted with this good of a budget for a while. And I tell you when something's really good is when every episode you're turning to the person that you're watching it with and you're like, I think they did it. No, I think they did it. No, but this is the reason why this. And it's almost like Cluedo. And then at the end, it shocks you the most. So it leads you down all these different rabbit holes and different paths. And it goes. And it's also fascinating to see like 55-year-old Nicole Kidman look like she's 21. Mm. The amount of surgery she has done to her face is actually mind-blowing. She's like a cyborg. She has, honestly, it looks like she hasn't aged a day. Obviously, I know she's a lot older, but what they do to make her look so young in that film.
Yeah, I
like,
can see this. It's quite phenomenal.
Like, it's actually crazy.
It's the undoing of age.
But she cannot move her face properly, that's for sure. Like, emotions just don't hit the same they used to when she was younger. But anyway, go check it out, The Undoing. I really enjoyed it. It was a great show. That's going to be a 4.5 nice. Out of 5 for me. So go check out The Undoing. It's good to have Hugh Grant back in the spotlight as well, even though, and he has not touched a Botox needle and been under the he looks every bit of 55. So make sure you go check out that show if you haven't already. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Guys, the end of February means the end of your discount for Project Strong. If you want to get on a strength bandwagon, jump on Project Strong. Obviously, it's in the app. It's got the workout demonstrations. It's got the community on there. You can lock your scores. You can carry it with you into the gym and use it on your phone as you go, which makes it super handy, better than a PDF, better than an Excel sheet. So, the 8-week program you can get at themindmuscleproject.com/strong. The discount till the end of Feb is Strong 30. So Strong 30, one word. When you land on that page, put it in and you'll get 30% off. Guys, pleasure as always. Thanks for tuning in and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the Mind Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the Mind Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.